Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Promo code STAPLE20.
Good to have you company for another D Word podcast where we talk dementia. Now, social care is something that's rarely out of the news these days, but despite that coverage, it's still looked on by many experts as being in crisis. My guest on this edition aims to do something about that. Kat Hall started working in social care when she was just 14, and it gave rise to a lifelong passion for the subject. She's now director of the Bay Care Group. Well, Kat, it's a pleasure to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word, director of the Bay Care Group down there at lovely Paignton. Very nice place to be. Tell us a little bit about your story. I mean, you started off in social care when you were a teenager, didn't you?
I did. I started actually at 14 years old. So, it was quite a journey for me. I actually popped into a care home. I seen it back then, and this is showing you how old I feel I am now. Back then, I seen the advert in the newspaper, you know, the old school, put a circle around the jobs in the paper. And it was actually for care assistant. So I applied for the job in the care home, went and had the interview with the registered manager, and I looked a lot older than I was. So I made an effort. When you're younger, you wanna look 21. And now I'm older, I wanna look 21 again. I went, and she absolutely loved me. And I actually bumped into the owner in the care home. He was in there painting, decorating, and I met him and shook his hand. And then as I got down the road, she rang me and she was like, "I'm really sorry, we can't give you the job." And I was like, "Oh no, what happened?" And she was like, "Well, we didn't realise you were only 14 years old." She said, "Legally in England, you've got to be 18 years old to work in care." And I was like, "Oh, I'm really gutted. I'll come back when I'm 18. And then again, an hour later, she rang me back and said, the owner of the care home was so impressed with how bubbly you was and how you were talking to all the residents and everything. He's actually said he's still going to give you a job as a tea girl so that you can just come in and socialise with the clients." So I sort of accidentally got the job. So that's where my journey began.
And from 14 to 21, you made quite a journey there because you became the youngest registered manager with the Care Quality Commission.
Yes, I did. Well, what was actually interesting, so I actually became the acting manager of the care home at 19 years old. And the commissioners at that time, well, the regulators at that time, it wasn't CQC then, I can't remember for love nor money what there was before, were happy for me to hold the acting manager position until I was old enough to register. And yeah, I went at 21. I was so nervous. Honestly, I didn't know if I was going to go through with it, to be honest, at one point. I sat and had the interview. And even at the end of the interview, he said to me, "You do realise you are the youngest on record to ever, ever be interviewed for a registered manager's position." And I was like, "Oh, I'm not going to get it. And I'm not." You know, I went into self-sabotage mode. And then I got it, and yeah, that was a very, we had a big party. You know, that was a very, very big celebration when I achieved that.
Yeah, absolutely, not surprised. And then, you know, we moved forward a bit, 2008, and you founded the Bay Care Group.
That's right. So what I did is actually there was a shed at the bottom of the care home, just like a little shed, a little room. And I spoke to the owner of the care home because obviously he'd known me since I was since I was 14 years. So I actually, he's more like a father to me now. Him and his wife are like We're really close friends, and they rein me in when I get a bit excited. I said to them, look, I think we need to do more. We need to step outside the care home and see what we can offer as a service in the community. And they trusted me, what I was saying, and they said, right, you use that space if you want and start building something. So I did. I used to finish my 12-hour shift, go and sit in the shed, start writing up business plans, policies, procedures. And you can imagine in that day and age, we didn't have AI. We didn't have like much in Google space, etc. Everything was coded and you've got to pay for it. So I pretty much started writing everything from scratch. So it took me a little while. And then I used to go out and do a lot of care myself. And then we just started growing. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's long in common, really. This radio station started with, as our CEO says, three listeners and a wonky website. It's now got 1.5 million monthly listeners across the globe. And you started in a shed, and all that you've achieved, it just tells you, you know, what you can achieve. I mean, let's talk a little bit about social care. This whole social care thing. One of my thoughts is that if I stop the average person's a bus queue and say to them, what is social care? They might well struggle to come up with an answer to that question. Like, social care, you know, what is it?
Absolutely. And, you know, even still now, it's, you know, we need to educate the public a little more about it. And, you know, I always think back, like, look at the adverts. They do it so well, don't they? They make you want to eat something you don't even want to eat. They make you buy things that you don't, you know, the algorithms, everything. It's constantly there because, one, they get the investment to publicise things like that. Two, they're valued in what they're doing, and this is why they're getting a following. But we don't get that, unfortunately, in social care. We're sort of seen as we're hidden in the corner, you know, below the NHS. We've got this massive integrated system, apparently. But no, social care, people just go, oh, you help people to the toilet. You know, that's the sort of thing you do. But no, honestly, it's just so much more than that. And what I always say to everyone, if you look at a nurse and a doctor, you know what they do. They do one area. This is what they do. They focus on their specialities. And then you look at a care worker, support worker, unpaid carer. So, you know, they do complex care. So that would be a lot of nursing duties sometimes as well. You know, they're a chef. They'll help you with all your food. They're a pharmacist. They're helping you with your medication. They're a housekeeper. They're a counsellor. You know, they're a companion. You know, they're doing so much more and they have all that pressure on them. And then, like you say to somebody, what is social care? And it just goes back to taking someone to the toilet again. That is literally the first phase. So we don't celebrate it enough and it's not valued enough. And, you know, the whole point of sort of Providers Unite, which I know we're going to come on to, is actually we've got to change that dialogue. Because we, you know, social care is what holds up the NHS. And if we didn't exist, then actually anybody that needs that emergency medical treatment, which we all know the NHS is a responsive, reactive service to us all, but they don't realise the great work that's being done to prevent people having to access that service, and it's not recognised enough.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
On UK Health Radio, there are now over 40 health-related shows every week to listen to on the station and available for listen again and download from the website at ukhealthradio.com. On this edition, I'm talking social care with my guest, Kat Hall. You know, you mentioned Providers United. Let's talk a little bit about that. And again, from the outside view, people might look and say there are so many care facilities, there are so many people offering care in a home or whatever, that rightly or wrongly, they may feel that all these are competing against each other, and anybody's kind of wanting your business, as it were. Which, I mean, how do you get away from that one?
Well, I mean, obviously, because it is a private sector, most of us service local authority or care trust clients anyway. So we have like a fair bid process where we all bid for the same work. So there's not that much competitiveness with that, because once it's you're awarded, it's your contract. And I think historically, it has been competitive, but I think since we bought Providers Unite together, we're breaking that down. It's a bit like in COVID, really. We all come together and things shifted and changed, but then we went back to being a little bit, well, this is my secret, this is what I do, and I'm a bit more outstanding than you. And then I think with the Providers Unite, we've broke that down. You know, I've seen lots of posts from competitors. No, we're now co-conspirators. You know, this is the sort of thing that this movement is doing, and this is what we need to do. So I think we're not you. We haven't got a union, so we haven't got actually somebody bringing us all together. We've got lots of brilliant associations all over the UK. That look after their members and keep them informed, and you know, they put things forward for them, but we don't have anything that is a movement, and that's what Providers Unite is, and I think that's why it feels so different.
And you certainly gave yourselves a public face on the
Yeah.
25th of February with a rally.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, what stuff? So it started with I watched the budget in bed because I was a bit late catching up on it. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend I watched it early because I did. and I was really cheesed off. I thought, not again. We're getting thrown away again. We're getting pushed backed into a corner now. And we know that year on year, we don't get given the inflation we need to reward our staff. And what we're trying to do is make the sector a career progression for our employees. We want to be able to pay them better. We actually just want to be able to pay them the same as the NHS, you know, because we're doing the same thing. So you look at a healthcare assistant in the NHS who's actually doing less than what you look at the care assistants in care homes and in the community. But what we're saying is we just want the same recognition. So with that, I started a petition to exempt the social care sector from the increases. And then I think because I was angry reading, I didn't really realise that the charities was affected, hospices, GPs. And the more and more this was unfolding right in front of my eyes, I'm like, oh my God, this is really bad. This is bad news. And I started rallying my petition through LinkedIn. And then I'd seen the lovely Nadra from National Care Association had put out a letter to the Chancellor under the title of sort of Providers Unite. She had 120 signatures on there. And I sort of started sharing what her letter, they were sharing my petition. And then we were just like, right, we need to do things together because that's where we're going to get the impact. And Nadra sort of turned around to me and said, Kat, you get 1,000 people together and we'll do a rally. And I was like, right, challenge accepted. We are absolutely doing a rally. We're going to make history. We've never done a rally. There's so much passion and appetite to get the sector the value it deserves. So no, let's do it. And we did. And it was, do you know what, Pete? It was very easy because everyone is just so fed up. You know, we show up every day. We show up for the people that need us. We show up for our staff. So it was really easy getting people to show up for the sector again, like they do all the time, to ask for it to be valued. Help us find a solution for this national insurance increase and just give us a seat at the table, really. You know, we've got people making decisions about the sector that that have no idea how we operate. You know, we've got government going out having a few snapshots in care homes, etc. But the day-to-day operations, the pressure, it's a lot, and people are not getting compensated for the sacrifices that they're making.
Well, one extreme body that did listen was the House of Lords, who voted yes. to exempt social care from the national insurance rises that were in the budget. It's obviously got a way to go. It's got to go to the other lot, the House of Commons. But, you know, that's a bit of a victory, isn't it?
Oh, well, So we did the rally, and then I didn't get back. So I think everyone started descending off about 3 o'clock. And then I was doing the radio, and then I had a podcast. So I didn't actually get back to my hotel room until about 10 o'clock at night. And then by 10 o'clock, I had something ridiculous, like 3,000 WhatsApp messages, which I knew was going to be all the amazing pictures. So, you know, I was sat there looking through it like it's a Littlewoods catalogue, thinking, you know, oh my God, look at all these things. I'm getting a bit teary. I'm getting a bit emotional. And then my husband was ringing me, and I'm thinking, no, I'm doing something more important than needing to speak to him. And I'm sat there surrounded in chocolate because I'd forgotten to eat the whole day because I was running on adrenaline. And then I thought, no, he's like, have you seen the paper? And I thought, oh God, I'm going to have to ring him now. And then he sent me the link, and I was like, oh my God. I had that rush of adrenaline like I'd just done a bungee jump or jumped out of an aeroplane. And I was like, I rang up Nadra and I said, Nadra, I'm sending you a link. Is this real, or is this a virus on the internet? What is it real? And she looked at it. We found the minutes of the meeting that they'd had, and I couldn't sleep then, could I? I was absolutely beside myself. So I'm messaging all the groups. I'm putting it on LinkedIn. I'm like, I think we got heard today, guys, because I think they had that meeting two hours after our rally. And when we were doing the rally, we managed to position everyone outside the front of Parliament so we could see all the MPs looking out the windows. We green carded about 150 MPs. So the guys went in and met with them in the house. And then we had MPs coming out to meet us whilst we were having our sort of picnic, and we had the singing on. So it's a massive victory. Obviously, it's not the end, we've still got stuff to do, but the fact that we've got the Lords on our side, like, I couldn't think of anything better. I'm taking it as a massive, massive victory, but we've got to get over the next hurdle now.
You do figure it would be difficult now to backtrack that the senior house, as it's still called in politics, has actually made that decision. I mean, you know, there's a real lot of financial sense about all of this, isn't there? Because I saw a statistic, I think it might have been on your website, actually, that every pound invested in social care generates £2.36 in socio-economic benefits. So yes. it doesn't take a lot to work out that this is a good thing.
You know, and with that, I read it over and over again, and I think, why is this not so simple? And sometimes I've been told a lot in my life, Kat, people don't think like you, because I'm quite innovative in my thinking. So I do dilute things down and think, right, Kat, is it as easy in your head for everybody else? But no matter how many different ways I look at that, it couldn't be any clearer. It's very, very basic. And the evidence is there. You know, when I found out that they've got the Baroness to do another report, I'm just like, oh my God, how many more reports do we have to go through? That we've done open book exercises with all the councils across the UK. You know, this has been done and done and done and done and done. Why are we doing it again? And honestly, if I hear the words one more time, we inherited a broken system. That get out it's boring and it's done now, that needs to stop. You know, you might have inherited it, but what you don't is take something broken and then smash it into pieces more. What you're there to do is fix it. And that is not what's happening here. And that is what is hugely frustrating, especially when you've got the Prime Minister going on his social media every day saying, right, we've just invested all this money into the defence of the country. Right, we've just invested this money into breakfast clubs for all the children because we want to give them the great start in life. And, you know, I've gone on there and I'm responding to him. He's going to block me soon, saying, you know, okay, are you going to start giving free breakfast clubs to the elderly? Because in a minute, well, we will have to cut services. Nobody's going to be helping them get dressed. Nobody's going to be helping them have breakfast. So will we be doing that? You know, extra money to get in more police officers on the beat. Brilliant. Do you know how many ex-offenders we look after? And we prevent re-offending if we cut services. These extra resources, and brilliant things, by the way, so I'm not discrediting you know the additional services, because I think it's fantastic, but actually what you all you're doing is putting in resource to pick up the slack that we're already doing. So it's not going to be extra resource. It's the same with the NHS. We'll have all these, you know, thousands and thousands more hospital appointments. Well, you won't, because the accident and emergency will be full to capacity like it is all the time at the moment. So when that happens, you have to stand down all your appointments. You might book those extra appointments, but they don't actually take place. So again, it needs to scale right back, look at social care. And we're not asking for anything unreasonable. We're just saying, give us the same respect and value that you give your own workforce that delivers the same services as us.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You know, we are bees out of the same pod in terms of looking at things and thinking, well, this is so blindingly obvious. Why is it happening? And one of the areas I look at is, you know, I used to work in local authority in public health, and it was just this friction between local authorities and the NHS. And when you get the NHS saying, we'll leave it to the local authority, and the local authority saying, we'll leave it to the NHS. Controversial point. But wouldn't it be better if this whole thing was just put under a health and welfare umbrella and dealt with centrally?
100%. But again, Pete, doesn't that just sound so basic? Because nowadays, you know, in my head, I try and picture things a lot. I see that they think, right, here's something really, really simple. Let's just pick it up. Toss it about, kick it about a bit, and let's make it more complicated when it doesn't need to be. And I feel that's what happens in the sector a lot. You know, I have to say, though, I'm down in the Torbay and Devon area. Like you said, it's not so warm today, mind. And I do have very, very proactive council and care trust. And we do communicate, we do talk. We do work together. So I am really, really lucky to be in that position where I am. But obviously with Providers Unite, I know that's absolutely not a thing across the board. So, it is. It's like, how can we make things so much more complicated? So and I don't know. What is the reason, Pete? I do not know.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Here on UK Health Radio, we're gearing up for the 2025 UK Health Radio Awards. Once again, there will be a Wendy Mitchell Award for Dementia Support. We'll be announcing the five nominees shortly. Then all we need is your votes. So watch out on social media and at ukhealthradio.com for all the details. Back to my guest on this edition now, Kat Hall from the Baycare Group. No, I think you're absolutely right. It's always fooled me because, you know, I used to do things and say, look, we could have this amount of money for this public health initiative. And I honestly, this is without a word of a lie, I had local politicians that said, why should we spend our money saving the NHS money? And you think, How are we ever going to solve these problems when,
Ever.
people think that way? I mean, one of the areas, and I know you're very passionate about, is our use of technology now.
Yes.
We're not too far away. You're in Devon, I'm in Hertfordshire, but I talk to people all over the world using technology.
Yes.
We have so much technology, but we don't seem capable of using it properly at times.
It's not, and do you know what? I think we can use it, and it is easy to use, and it will make everyone's life easier, and it will save millions and billions, I'm convinced of it, pounds for the sector. But we don't know how to pay for it. We don't know how to commission it. Okay, like I was saying earlier, we're a very, well, not us. The trust and the council is very reactive. So that's what they're used to deal with. You don't know, you deal with people that have become aware. It's a reactive service. Or, they try to say it's preventative, but no, it's reactive, especially at the moment with having to get appointments and how long things take. So they can evidence how and where they're making savings with a reactive service. But when it comes to a preventative service, how do you get on paper that by putting this in 12 months ago, 24 months ago, it helped prevent this person going through the front door of A&E? It helped this person from going into long-term care placement. How do you can't capture that. They can't capture that. We can. We can, because we can say, bye-bye, they're doing this, we prevented this, and we can sort of do the story and the journey, but they can't fund that. So there needs to be a massive policy change on, I know they've done a lot of work on outcome-based care. But again, we're going outcome-based. What about prevention? Yeah, we need to scale it right back. So there was some brilliant tenders and bids available for preventative tech innovation, but now that has all stopped. It's all gone quiet with what's going on with the national insurance, etc. Everyone just seems to have been freezing. The council certainly haven't got any extra money that they can start looking at innovation, because in a minute they don't know if they're going to have any providers left in their area. So, and again, all the innovation, you look at who's innovating, providers. Providers are innovating. They're building systems. They're trialing. They're investing. I invested into a AI home monitoring kit with, it was, I can't remember who the company was called now, but it does monitors all vital signs, it's AI generated, etc. And we use this in the home instead of having care visits go in as much. We still have some level of input, but not as much. So again, we'd save the NHS, the council's money. So I couldn't get a pilot signed off for it. And then I did get a pilot and I funded the lot. So I invested the money to run a pilot and said, right, just use it for free. And still, I can't get anyone on the pilot to use the free technology, because they haven't got the resource, nor the staff, nor the time to think, right, who would this best suit? What does this look like? What pathway would we go down? It's still difficult. There's too much work to be done within the powers that be to get this innovation and tech started. So I do think we're a way off. We've got years to go until we fully embed anything that's going to sort of reduce the need for hands-on support, replace it with some technology. And like I said, technology won't replace all, but I always think about clients that are isolated at home and they can't have someone with them all day. Having some tech to support them, keep them company, that sort of companionship. I feel that that's going to really benefit people in the long term, help with a lot of, preventative care measures.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's going back and it's just, taking all the building blocks out and starting again. Because I see, the headlines, like you were saying earlier, actually, you said earlier in the conversation about giving money to provide more doctor's appointments. But shouldn't we be backtracking on stuff like that and seeing why people need a doctor in the first place?
Absolutely, 100%. And I mean, we all know how hard it is to get a doctor's appointment nowadays, anyway. But yeah, why are people needing this additional support? And is it because actually the GPs take 2-3 weeks to get you an appointment from your first referral, so things are escalating, you know. But again, this isn't the GP's fault. They haven't got enough funding. They haven't got enough support. Same with the pharmacists, you know. And they're all going to be impacted by these changes come April. And if you think the system's bad now, God, honestly, if we don't get something done about this national insurance increase, I dread to think. It's horrifying. You know, we've got people in Providers Unite that are good. They're closing. They're closing. They're shutting their doors. They're selling. We've got people sat hanging around hoping there's going to be sort of a solution that comes before they have to make drastic decisions. You know, we've got the Prime Minister and the government saying this won't affect the front line. Well, it will affect the front line because we all do extra stuff for our staff. I always call it my fluffy stuff, where, you know, we reward them. We do staff appreciation, which, again, is another thing. Don't get me started on the barriers in benefit in kind. If you want to look after your staff, you've got to pay for it on top of paying for it. But that's a different show, Pete. so, you know, it's just all these barriers all the time. It's gonna really affect the front line, and it makes me really sad. You know, I do a lot of events for my team. You know, we buy them coffees on days, we deliver cakes and stuff. You know, all this really nice stuff. We're gonna have to scale back. We're gonna have to scale back on some of the office staff. You know, because the office and the admin isn't really factored into our hourly rate. Changes are coming, and they're not going to be positive, unfortunately, if we don't get the right support that we really need and deserve.
Oh, deserve, absolutely. I mean, you know, I can't remember, it was years ago, but there used to be a programme called Back to the Floor, where a chief executive of McDonald's would flip burgers for a day or something like that. Wouldn't it be great if every member of parliament just had one day where they had to go and join someone like you?
Yeah, what did we use to? You're thinking of like the undercover boss, aren't you? Sort of thing, yeah. And here we do, and even like the teachers, we all do it, back to the field days, you know. And absolutely, if West Streeting wants to come and have a day with me, I will welcome it, and I will give him a really simple induction that would blow his mind on what actually happens in the social care sector. I would look after him, but I would welcome him to come and spend the day with me. And we've said that, you know, we said to care providers, has there been any contact from anyone from government? Bring them in, invite them in, show them what you're all about. But no, you're right, that should take place. I think anybody in a position of power needs to go to the roots. You can't lead on something that you have no up-to-date experience and knowledge about. Yeah, we can rely on your advisors giving you, updates, but your advisors have got their own opinion. You know, you're a leader because you're supposed to think differently. You're leading because you're doing what's best for the country. Now, your advisors' agendas are and could be different to yours. So you need to get out there. I absolutely agree with you.
Well, there's nothing like a lived experience. I don't think we can count West Streeting amongst our listeners, but if we do, then the...
Then bring me back.
I'm sure you'll make him a nice cup of tea and give him a cake. So
I absolutely would look after him.
Well, Kat, time unfortunately is bringing us to a close. It's been an absolute pleasure, and yes, we will get you back on, because this is a subject that's going to run and run and run and run. In the next, let's put it in the next 12 months, one thing you hope will have been achieved in the next 12 months positive to carry it forward?
I think the national insurance solution is the key thing, because that's time. You know, we've not got time. That comes in on the 1st of April. And then it's getting the system valued and recognised. That is the next 12 months. I really want to push that on.
Well, fingers crossed when it goes to the House of Commons, it will go
Absolutely.
through.
Keep sharing for me, Pete. Keep spreading the word, darling. And fingers crossed it all works in our favour.
Well, we will do that. And I say we will get together again a little bit later on in this year when hopefully things will have progressed a little bit. And all I can say for now is it's been a pleasure. Thanks a lot for being my guest on the D Word.
Lovely. Thanks, Pete.
Thanks to Gat, and I look forward to getting her back on the podcast in the future. If you want to read more about Providers Unite, it's all on the website at www.providersunite.co.uk. Well, that's all we've got time for on this edition. Thanks for your company, and I hope you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on the D Word Podcast.